Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, it's Wednesday, everybody, and I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, overlooking Beaker's Paddock in Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 22nd, 2012, episode number 472. This episode is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here at Horses in the Morning. Jamie is out today, and if she was here, she'd probably be saying something like this: "Woohoo! It's only going to be 99 degrees today. I need to get out and ride my horses." So the temperatures, and actually, I looked at their weather tomorrow. It's only supposed to be 95. She should be like in heaven because, you know,
yeah,
it's not 115. Yeah, it's chilly out there. She's probably got her sweater on. So, and I'm all jacked up because I had chocolate cake for breakfast, and any of the longtime listeners of the show will know that little inside joke. So, yes, I had a big piece of homemade chocolate cake with chocolate icing for breakfast. Nothing better. There is nothing better for breakfast than that in the world. Still,
except that you have it with chocolate milk. Did you
have
it with chocolate milk?
No, I didn't have it with chocolate milk. I stuck with white milk because that seemed like too much of an indulgence. To have it with chocolate milk, too. Yeah.
You're all about moderation, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm all about moderation. My chocolate cake with my huge thing of chocolate icing on top. Definitely.
Hey, are we open the chat room today, Guy?
Yes. So get the chat room open. By the way, you can go to the chat room by going to blogtalkradio.com and searching for Horses in the Morning. Should be there on the homepage or on the current shows. And just click on that, and the chat room is right in there. You can join other listeners who are chatting along today. But we're all jacked up today because we've got lots of guests, don't we, Jennifer?
We have guests at the Yin Yang. We're going to open up the show today with Alex Dawson, is the producer of a new documentary set to come out later this week called Wild Horse, Wild Ride, and it follows the adventures of some of the competitors in the Extreme Mustang Makeover contest that many of us are familiar with. And if the trailer is any indication, this is going to be a very interesting documentary. There are some famous faces in that documentary because there's some very prominent trainers in the industry who take part in it. But there's also some people that we've never met before and look like really interesting characters. So I can't wait to chat with her. And being Wednesday and all, Victoria Spicer, the Velvet Voice of Horse and Country TV, will be here with the latest and the greatest. I suppose she has finally gotten over her post-Olympics hangover. And Dr. Jones and Michelle, of course, thehorse.com, is here to give us something gooey and gory. And today's topic is housing your horse. But somehow or another, I've got a sneaking suspicion Dr. Jones will figure out a way to make that gooey and gory.
Yeah, just for my benefit, I'm sure she will. Well, yeah. We're going to do our daily winner. Well, my daily Winnie goes out to two different people. Actually, today is Gemma for finding, she posted on our Facebook page, both of these were posts on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. Gemma posted on there a picture of her with an Okapi, which is a
Okapi.
Okay. It's an African animal that's part zebra, part antelope, and part several other things, I think. But we saw them down at the Animal Kingdom when we went to Disney World, and I fell in love with okapis, and we had a discussion about them on the show. Well, she didn't find a live one. She found one that was quite stuffed, and in it looks like a glass case. I'm not sure where she was even, but it looked like some kind of museum, and there was an okapi there, so she took a picture with the okapi and sent it along. By the way, if you want to own an okapi, apparently you can. They start at about $50,000. So
there you go.
And I don't think they're very rideable either.
Well, they're kind of slopey in the back like a giraffe, so that I don't know that the saddle would stay on so well.
But they had a long neck. You could hold on there, I guess, if you had to. And big ears. They're really cute. If you've ever seen an okapi, just look up OKAPI or go to our Facebook page and just look for Gemma's post. And then thanks to Shelley Billings for her post on there. She said, Glenn, my horse husband likes these cowboy hats. And it's jwbrookscustomhats.com. Or maybe it's the cowgirls on the homepage. They have the sexiest picture of three cowgirls with that much clothes on in the water wearing their fancy, they do make lovely cowboy hats, in their fancy cowboy hats. And I got to give a shout out to J.W. Brooks Custom Cowboy Hats. Whew. You have some nice hats. This thing. And thank you to Shelly
nice
for all the
hats that they have.
Thank you to Shelly for posting those pictures. I appreciate it. We all, us guys out here, us horse husbands, we don't always feel the love, but every once in a while, one of you terrific horse wives posts something on our Facebook page to help us feel the love, and this was one of them. And I also discovered that old JW, who makes custom hats for some very, very notable people in the horse world. He also is a singer, and he has a couple of songs he did that are for sale, so maybe I'll try and get JW. We'll have to talk to JW about it. So thank you to Shelley. We really appreciate that. And now it's Jennifer's turn.
My daily Winnie goes out for birthdays. You can press the button, Len. Press the button. The birthday button.
Happy birthday.
Congratulations, Shauna Krall and Karen McCracken, for making it through another year. Happy birthday, ladies.
Both listeners of ours, we really appreciate them listening in every day. Now, we have something special for Really Bad Ads this week, don't we?
We do. Really Bad Ads coming again this Friday to the interweb near you. This week's prize is a set of Summer Winnies, made by the Winnie Warmers Company. They are socks for your horse, and the Summer Winnies are designed specifically to protect your horse's legs from insect bites, and if they've got little cuts and scrapes and other nasties on their legs from heat and bug bites, it will help them heal better. And that's from the folks at WinnieWarmers.com.
There have been lots of good, really bad ad entries coming in, so get yours in to Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. Get them in today or tomorrow, because we'll be doing that on Friday. I can't believe how much we're getting new people and finding really bad ads all the time. That truly has become the most popular segment on the show.
Yeah, kind of has.
our number of listeners on Fridays is always much, much higher, and everybody just seems to like the really bad ad segment. And Jamie will be back on Friday, so don't worry. She'll be here for really bad ads.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to hold off, Jennifer, on we have this list I've been trying to do for 3 weeks now. It's called Horse Terminology, and it relates directly to our really bad ad segment. So I'm going to hold off until Friday when Jamie's here to talk about that, because I think she'll have something to say about it, I'm sure. And I got something else I wanted to talk about this morning, and this is more techie. I just saw a podcast this morning that I watch every day from the tech world, and it reminded me. And something else reminded me, one of my other friends has recently had their email hacked, and I, of course, got the obligatory hack thing from their email account that says go to this address, and I didn't, so I didn't get the virus that was attached to it. And that just reminded me about passwords. We haven't discussed that in a while, and it's important to everybody that's listening. to, and I have a list here of from one of the tech magazines on how to choose a password, what to choose and what not to choose. And I thought, you know, I realize this isn't horse related, but it's very, very important, because if you get your passwords hacked for one of your accounts, it means that you're probably being hacked for all of your accounts, and you are going to have a very bad couple of days. So it's something that you with a little bit of prevention, you can avoid. Now, Jennifer hates it because I actually follow a couple of these, and she'll understand what I'm saying here in a minute. And it does create a little bit of hassle in your life, but it does make things safer. And here are a couple of the rules things you shouldn't do when choosing a password, and how many of you I know have done this or are still doing it. Do not choose a password based on a personal data like your name, your username, your pet's names, or other information that one could easily discover about you from sources and searching on the internet and Facebook. You know, we did it too. We used our pet names for years. We don't do that anymore. But nowadays with Facebook, it's very easy for the social engineers, which is the clever name for the hackers, to get into your Facebook.
Is that a hacker or social engineer?
Yeah, that's a hacker, the social engineers. They have a new title. For them to get in and actually just, you know, figure out your pet's names and then start using those, they're very good at their task. So let's not give them any help. Do not choose a password that is a word, English or otherwise, proper name of a TV show, keyboard sequence, or anything else that one would expect a clever person to put in a dictionary of passwords. So in other words, don't use real words is what they're saying. And I know that's so easy to do and it's easy to remember, but it's actually, you know, what they're saying is it's actually better to keep a list of passwords, you know, that you hide somewhere in your office and keep it on a list than to keep it on the computer or to use proper words, because those are easily hackable. Do not use a password that is a simple transformation of a word, such as putting a punctuation mark at the beginning or end of a word, or if you add one to it, like your dog's name's Fido, you put Fido 1 or Fido 2 or Fido 3. And I know I've been guilty of that in the past. We don't do it anymore. But, yeah, that's one that you should not do. It's very easy to crack. Do not choose passwords less than 8 characters long or that are made up solely of numbers or letters. They always want you to use letters of different cases, use uppercase and lowercase, a mixture of digits and letters and or characters, like pound signs or ampersands or things like that. So the best method for choosing passwords, and this is I had never really seen this one before until I read this article, and it kind of makes sense. It says to make up a sentence that you can easily remember. Some examples, I have 2 kids, : Jack and Jill, period. And they say what to do is take the first letter of every word in the sentence and include the punctuation, or maybe throw in some extra punctuation, and just that's your new password. But you can remember it because you can recite back to yourself that sentence and know what the first letters are. That was kind of an easy way to do it where you don't have to write down your passwords. The other thing is, and this is truly difficult to do, is to never use the same password for 2 accounts. Always use passwords. I know, but this is the reason. Okay, so you use the same password for your Facebook and your Twitter and your bank account and, you know, your Hulu account and your Netflix account. The problem is if Netflix gets hacked, which has happened, or Facebook or any one of them, and they get that list of passwords, the first thing they'll do is try using that password in other accounts. So what happens is instead of just you've been hacked as part of a group hack, and now all of your accounts are subject. So that's why this drives Jennifer nuts, but we try and use separate passwords for everything we do. And then the other thing that's difficult to do but is highly recommended is that once every 3 months you change all your passwords. You go through all of your accounts. That does 2 things. One, it makes sure that they're fresh and that your chances of getting hacked are much less. And the second thing it does is it makes you take a look at your accounts, the ones that are maybe gone dormant or the ones you don't use anymore, and it makes you clean up your accounts that you have out there. You maybe close some that you're not going to use anymore. So those are the rules. I know this is very difficult and not easy to do, but I hope that helps everybody and reminds everybody to go out and get your, you know, change your passwords and make them something that are harder to hack. Social engineers are very good at their job. And they have these computer programs that help them out. So, and those computer programs have all the main words in them and have every common name in them. So that's my advice for the day on passwords.
It doesn't work like the movies where there's some guy sitting there in a dark room with caffeinated beverages typing, trying to break into your account. It doesn't really work that way. They sit there and they create one program, and then the computer does all the work for them.
Yeah, but they're still guys, but they're probably not. The dark room is their parents' basement. and what they're drinking is large quantities of 5-hour energy drinks and Mountain Dew.
Mountain Dew.
And they're probably 16 to 18 years old.
Is that the profile for a hack?
Yeah, one of the very famous tech guys in the tech world got hacked not too long ago, and he had a heck of a problem because they hacked his Twitter account. Well, he had about 100,000 followers on his Twitter account, and they started posting some things up there that sounded legitimate but weren't real and really caused him some problems. And they social engineered that. He wasn't following the rules. They social engineered it into his figuring out what his passwords were, and that became a problem. So I know everything I said is not easy to do, but it's something that you almost have to do. And follow those rules. Keep that in mind, everybody. Go out and change your passwords today. Well, before we get to our first guest here, a couple of the news things that we have going on is that there was a very – I don't know if it's very funny or sad – out of Detroit, they discovered when there was this company, independent company, that was supposed to go figure out why Detroit's workforces were so bloated and why they were spending so much money on their workforces and going broke. Well, one of the things they took a look at was the Detroit Water and Sewage Department. And they discovered that there's a horseshoer, a farrier, that's on the payroll for the Detroit Water and Sewage Department. He makes $29,245 in salary and roughly $27,000 in benefits for a grand total of $56,000. Now, the problem with that is there are no horses for the horseshoer to shoe at the Detroit Water and Sewage Department. And apparently there are other jobs like this that are listed at various government agencies in Detroit. An independent report said that the city probably could trim more than 80% of its workforce. Now, the water department argues with that and says that they don't have enough people even to keep things going as it is. And their explanation as far as the horseshoer was that they have a blacksmith shop in their central services facility, and it also repairs equipment and works on various metals and welding for the department when needed. Now, I don't know the last time...
He's a welder.
Yeah, no, apparently he's not used very much, and he's not around very much. So there's your ideal horseshoeing job. If you're going to be a farrier, you need to peel in 50 grand a year and not even have to pick up a foot. You save your back that way.
Absolutely.
Not a problem at all.
A lot less hazardous.
Yeah. By the way, he was transferred, this particular job title was transferred from the police department about 5 years ago. Now, the police department does currently have horses. But the Department of Water farrier does not work with those animals. They hire an outside farrier to do that. So, yeah. So this is a cushy job. This is what everybody wants, $56,000 a year, and you don't have to show up for work every day. That's kind of nice. Well, let's go to our first guest today, Jennifer. And I have a little trailer I want to play. Our first guest is Alex Dawson. Co-producer of Wild Horse, Wild Ride, and this is a new film that's coming out, and we have the trailer here for you right now. Take a listen.
To take a wild horse and bond with him and get him where you can ride him, this is as good as it gets.
His world's basically been rocked, so he probably doesn't like people too much.
Come on, big guy. Let's go. There we go.
He's just a little more aggressive than I was hoping for.
This horse might be untrainable.
If I push too hard this horse, he's going to go to the fence.
I'm scared to tell you the truth.
He's a lot wilder.
Dealing with horses is not if you get hurt. It's when and how bad.
You gotta trust me. I trust you.
I think they want to show that a real person can really do it.
If we can win, we can show that an old fat guy can still ride a horse.
We all just want to help these horses get great homes.
That little Mustang got a lot of heart.
Welcome to the 2009 Extreme Mustang Makeover.
This competition means a whole lot of things to me.
Let's go wow the crowd. Let's go make them go. Did you just see that?
You have to keep watching and keep reminding yourself this horse was wild less than 100 days ago.
All that they know is what you taught him.
I think I'm going to fall in love with this horse. One of these days I'm going to say I was there. I did it.
I love him more than love.
This could be the horse that I'm going to finish my riding days on.
Well, that's the trailer for a new film coming out called Wild Horse, Wild Ride, about the Extreme Mustang Makeover, which we have covered here on the show a number of times. And we have with us today Alex Dawson, who with her, is a husband and wife team with her husband, Greg, and they have worked on
Hello?
Oh, Glenn's been dropped off the air. Thank you for coming on today, Alex. We appreciate you being here. Glenn, you're going to have to call back because you are gone.
Okay, so do you want me to call in?
Oh, we're doing great. So,
Glenn. Okay.
Glenn is gone. He left the room.
Okay.
But that's okay because
he'll come back.
He'll be back later. Give me kind of an overview of your background and what drew you to this Wild Horse Wild Ride project?
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. Greg and I had long. I mean, both of us have worked in the production of nonfiction television for many years, but had never done a feature film. And we'd always wanted to do our own film, and specifically, we'd always wanted to do a film about the relationship between man and horse, and sort of that almost magical bond that develops between those two species. And we're not horse people per se. You know, we don't have horses. We don't ride horses. I rode when I was little, but we've always been drawn to horse stories. And you know, who doesn't love the Black Stallion, one of my favorite movies of all time, and Seabiscuit, and all of those great films. And so we had been looking for years, actually, for the right story that would sort of encapsulate that relationship and allow us to really explore that relationship in a documentary. But the right story always eluded us until the summer of 2008, when Greg was flipping through our local newspaper. We live in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And he was flipping through the Jackson Hole Daily and came across this little blurb about this event called the Extreme Mustang Makeover. And he brought it to me and he said, "This is our movie." And I said, "Oh my God, this is our movie." The only problem is I was like, 8.5 months pregnant with our daughter at the time, and so the thought of starting a project was just, you know, it wasn't feasible. But Greg cut out the little blurb and taped it to our refrigerator, so it was there for, you know, for months. And finally, when our daughter was about 4 or 5 months old, I called Patty Colbert at the Mustang Heritage Foundation, and fortunately, nobody had done this film yet, and so she gave us the green light, and we went from there.
Wow. So that it just came together that quick. Now, once you did that, okay, we're going to make this. What kind of – did you have an idea that it would be a documentary? Had all of
yeah,
that –
Yeah, we always knew it was
going to
be a documentary. Yeah. We always knew it was going to be a documentary. And we always had – you know, we always had the sense of, you know, how cool would it be to follow a handful of very different characters – through the process of picking up a wild Mustang and training this Mustang from, you know, from the moment they meet it over 3 months up into competition and then through the adoption. And one thing that I forgot to mention is that after we read the blurb, we sent away to to the Mustang Heritage Foundation and got a few of the DVDs of the previous Mustang makeover that had been done. And we're just blown away by what these trainers were able to accomplish with their horses in 100 days, as well as, you know, just the incredible emotional element and, you know, the incredible bonds that these people developed with their horses over the course of many days. And I'm sorry, I think I'm jumping ahead. I think for those people who don't know what the Mustang makeover is, should I explain? Would you like me to explain what the Mustang makeover
sure.
is?
Sure. Yep. Sure.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Great. The Mustang makeover, the Extreme Mustang Makeover, is a competition event in which 100 people have 100 days to take a totally wild Mustang and transform it into an adoptable animal. So it was started by the Mustang Heritage Foundation and its executive director, Patty Colbert, who was looking for a way to sort of showcase the value of the wild Mustangs in order to promote and facilitate adoptions of these animals. And she had been watching reality television, and I think it was Extreme Home Makeover or Extreme Makeover, one of those, and had thought to herself, well, why couldn't we do this with horses? And, you know, I think Mustangs can have a little bit of a stigma in the horse world. You know, a lot of people sort of look at them as mutts and not having any sort of value, and she knew that to be different because, you know, if you talk to anybody who's trained or had a Mustang, they will tell you that, you know, that horse, once it trusts you, it will give itself to you completely and fully. And so she wanted to show that, and she thought, what better way to do it than to pair these trainers with these horses and then have them meet in competition, compete against each other, and then offer all the horses up for a public adoption.
I watched the trailer, and when you watch the trailer, actually watch the video, you realize that there are some variety of characters here that you followed along the way. Tell us about some of them.
Oh gosh, we got so lucky. We got so lucky going into it because, you know, the people who do this are just remarkable people. I mean, they're people who are very dedicated and very passionate. And we follow 9 trainers. Among them are George and Evelyn, who are a husband and wife team from Texas. And George is an older gentleman in his late 60s. And, you know, he goes into it. They're driving to pick up their horses. And he says, you know, I want a big, sturdy horse. And she says, his wife Evelyn says, okay, you get a big one, I'll get a little one. And the way it works is that everybody is randomly assigned to their horses by computer lottery. So when they arrive at the Pauls Valley, Oklahoma pickup facility, of course, George gets this tiny, scrawny horse and Evelyn gets this big, sturdy horse. And they're watching that hold. I mean, you couldn't have written it better than that. You know, that sort of watching those relationships develop is really interesting. We have Charles and Carlos Chi, who are a Navajo father and son who live on the reservation in Arizona. We have Wylene Wilson, who is a true cowgirl personified with, you know, all the glitz and glamour and all of that, and she is one heck of a horsewoman. I mean, she's an amazing rider. Jesus Haragi, who lives in Bailey's Harbor, Wisconsin, and was born in Mexico, I think moved here in his early 20s and has a construction and roofing business, and has just this incredible, he'd grown up on his father's ranch in Mexico and has sort of tried to recreate that life, at least on a smaller scale here in the U.S., and just has an incredible way with horses, as do the Kokel brothers, Nick and Chris Kokel, who are a pair that we followed, a pair of very young men who we followed up in New Hampshire, brothers, and they've sort of developed their own horse training technique where they don't use any metal, they use no spurs, no bits, anything like that, and do, you know, the most gentle horsemanship I've ever seen, and have sort of developed their very own approach to training and get staggering results. I mean, they're incredible. So they're all really amazing. And, you know, obviously we started from the 100 people who were participating in the competition and then narrowed it down from there, you know, made phone calls to people. But we also got really lucky in that, you know, to a certain extent, we could pick the human characters that we were going to follow. But because
right.
each person is randomly assigned to their horse, you know, we couldn't pick the equine characters per se, but we were delighted.
You knew out of 9 that you were going to get a couple of those horses that were going to be problem children. So you knew that by random numbers, and that there were going to be some that were going to be total standouts with following that many people.
Yeah, well, that's what we hoped. And as a matter of fact, I mean, you know, we felt that we got really lucky, though, because the equine characters were just as diverse as the people. So that was amazing. But you know, we started out filming nine people because we thought that, you know, that we were never going to be able to, we weren't going to keep all of them in the end. I mean, people were inevitably going to end up on the cutting room floor. And, you know, in the end, it was just too difficult to... it was too difficult to decide which stories were, not to decide necessarily, but the way that each person's story ends up playing out has its own value and its own, each one happens in a very special way. And so so we really fought in post-production to figure out how to keep every single one of our characters and still, you know, make the audience feel their journey and, you know, and feel everything that they're going through and really invest in the relationship that they're forming with their horses.
You know, obviously we're in radio, so we understand production and post-production and you know, video is even harder than that. That's got to be, when you take this much footage that you guys took over this period of time to follow them around and their training and then the final results, it's got to be so tough then to try and weed that down to an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's interesting because the way that we did it, you know, our editor was coming into this sort of fresh. She hadn't been with us while we were shooting and all of that stuff. So the way that we did it, so that we were sort of taking baby steps and so we weren't all too overwhelmed, is we edited each person's story individually. And then just to make sure that we had, you know, all the nuts and bolts, so we edited each trainer's story individually and then came back and wove them all together. And, of course, our first cut was like 3.5 hours long. And then we had to do a lot of whittling from there.
Obviously, the movie Buck was one that the film Buck we talked about, and we had Buck on and his producers on, and you know, that was the last film I can remember that's come out that's been in this nature about horses. So we're excited to see this one. Where can we see it?
Well, we're opening in New York City this weekend, so any New York area listeners, please come out and see it at the Village East Theater starting August 24th, and we will be there. Greg and myself and some of the stars of the film will be there on Friday and Saturday at the evening shows to do Q&As, and Sunday as well, as a matter of fact. And then the film opens in L.A., I think in 5 theaters in L.A., in the L.A. area, on September 7th, and then we'll roll out nationwide in a limited release from there. So I think right now we're booked in, you know, Phoenix, Tucson, Dallas, Denver, Boulder, Minneapolis, Seattle, Portland, a bunch of different cities. So you can see the whole schedule at our website, www.wildhorsewildride.com.
All right, and I do see here that you're going to be I'm looking at all the different places. Now, will it be out in DVD as well at some point here?
Yes. After the theatrical run, the DVD is going to go on sale hopefully before Christmas. I think that's the goal. Late fall, I think is the goal for the DVD.
Well, terrific. Well, you can find all of the information about it. What a great film. WildHorseWildRide.com. And, of course, we're big supporters of training the Mustangs and finding them homes and giving them a job to do so that they don't end up in a worse situation. And, you know, we've always been supportive of that. So I think the fact that you're highlighting that is terrific.
Yeah. I definitely encourage you to go see the film. I think you'll enjoy it.
Wild Horse, Wild Ride, and you'll find that coming out to a theater near you hopefully soon. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks so much, you guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
Well, I'm just taking a look at the list here, and I don't see any in Florida, though, Jennifer.
I went in. There's a little button there that says, you know, bring it to my town or something like that. I went in and pressed that little button.
Okay, I'll have to find the button and press it too, because I'm seeing a lot of cities here, but not a lot of countries. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So you know, that, which is good that the city people can get a little exposure to it, but we want to see it here in the country too.
The densely populated marketplaces first.
Right, and that's what Buck did too, and then it started coming out to some other places. So maybe if we keep hitting that button enough, you can get it in your local area as well. And as she said, we'll probably have it out in DVD by Christmas time. Be an excellent Christmas gift. Well, that's
fun. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. And we're going to take a break for our commercial here, and then we're going to be back with our next guest. Jennifer has them all booked up here today. But first, we have to hear from Back on Track Products. And I'm actually taking a look here for the commercial. There we go.
We're here with Bo from Back on Track, sponsoring today's show. And, Bo, we've discussed human products and we've talked about horse products, but you guys actually have things for dogs.
We do. We have dog blankets. We have dog beds. We actually have dog hock boots. We have dog leg wraps. And this is the same for horses and people. They help to reduce inflammation and get the dogs to feel better. We have everything from toy dogs up to large grain, what do you call them? The big ones.
Great Danes.
Great Danes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bernards, yeah.
Yeah.
So the dog bed, they would climb in the dog bed, and it the whole thing is lined with this ceramic that increases blood flow?
Yes. And dogs actually, it's hurting on one side. It's actually laying down on that side.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of fun to see. And you know, cats love something in the barn. They lay on the increased blood and warmth, you know. So both dogs and cats love it. And we sell a lot in the agility business. Not so much over here, some we have done in Europe, but we have not really promoted ourselves so much here. But, you know, everybody, some of my horses have a dog, and we have two kinds. We have a regular dog, some of the dog blankets, some they can have outside, and then we have one mesh,
mm-hmm.
some they can have indoors, some is a little bit lighter.
Okay, gotcha. So the hock boots for dogs, like these are for performance dogs or like those of us who have the older dogs?
Older dogs, you know, like it's not just performance. It's older dogs when they, you know, you start to be aches and pain. And
takes them a little while to get up.
Yeah, it really makes a difference. Without being a miracle, it really helps the dog, yes.
I can see it for a greyhound because when we take her to the dog park, she's a greyhound. So she runs her legs off and then she's a little stiff the next day. So that would probably be good for that.
Absolutely. And we have greyhound blankets. We have Dachshund blankets.
I was going to ask you that because the greyhounds are shaped different.
Yeah.
They need a different size blanket.
We do have them. And, you know, greyhound, they always freeze.
Right.
I had
hair.
No, had the Italian greyhound.
Oh, did you?
She always shaked. So, yeah, she would have been a...
They're so cute, Italian greyhound.
Yeah, she was a good dog.
Well, I would like to go and I'll have to go get one for our 15-year-old Basset hound, but I'm not letting our puppy anywhere near it. He feels good enough. He's driving me crazy. Well, thanks, Bo. From Back on Track, check out backontrackproducts.com.
Thank you.
Well, backontrackproducts.com. And now it is time for the European Report with Horse and Country TV's the wonderful, beautiful Victoria Spicer. Hey, Victoria.
Wow, that's some introduction.
Hey, you know what? I forgot your royal music, though. How about this? How about this? Does that work? the Queen music, I didn't have it uploaded, so you have to stick to a bugle. Sorry about that.
Off and running.
So, Victoria, what's going on? Are you recovered now from the Olympics? Y'all back to normal over there?
No, I feel like it hasn't happened yet. I feel like it's just been a bit of a dream and it's not really all over. And any day now, it's going to start all over again. But might be living in hope.
When does the Paralympics start? It's the end of the month, right?
7 days' time, so not too long to wait at all.
And I heard that the horses are from the various countries. I think there's 70 horses coming in for the Paralympics are arriving now, from what I've seen.
Yes, I'm sure they are all en route and all the athletes are starting to arrive. And, looking forward to getting back to Greenwich. And I'll actually be in the press room this time, being on the ground every day instead of in a TV studio right next to the park.
Now, I assume they kept the big stadium up. Is that what they did? Or did they change things around for Para?
Yes, they did. No, they've kept the stadium. And what I think they're doing is some tickets have been sold for purely Paralympic dressage, but other ones I think you can get kind of like roaming tickets and you can go and drop in and drop out of numerous different events, which is quite nice. So hopefully it'll mean we'll get some new people coming in to see the horses that perhaps don't know anything about para dressage or even equestrianism itself. So it'll be interesting to see what people make of it.
Now, the Greenwich Park actually was a park in the middle of London. Have they started to, like, tear down the cross-country course? Because this is Paralympics is only dressage, so they won't be using that. Where have they started to tear all those things down and put the park?
I think a lot of the fences were temporary, and so they were, as soon as the venting was over, they were actually coming down. And I hear some fences have been used in the cross-country course of Burley Horse Trials, which are also coming up at the end of this month. So there's going to be three of the Olympic cross-country fences in the main arena at Burley. So when they gallop through, and I can't remember whether it's Burley or Badminton, that one of them starts and ends in the main arena, and one of them it's just midway around the course. But yeah, we'll get to have a bit of a revival with the Olympic fences in there.
Well, cool. And I did notice here that the Paralympics starts on August the 30th at 9 a.m. for the Grade 2 team test. And it says here that it's in front of a sold-out equestrian venue.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yeah, it's been really, really popular, which I think hasn't ever happened before with Paralympics. But I think everybody was so desperate to come to the Olympics, and they're more than happy to either come back for the Paralympics or to grab the chance of getting to come to the venue and experience that atmosphere. So it's really great to see the tickets selling so well.
And, of course, now Great Britain, let's just say they did okay in the Olympics, you know, with those medals and everything, you know, the gold stuff. But you guys have been, you are the reigning champs as far as para dressage is concerned, and you have been since 1996.
Yes, we've got an amazing track record in Paralympics with our best rider is a guy called Lee Pearson, who he had a beautiful Palomino horse called Blue Circle Boy, and he just won everything on that horse. And it was the perfect colour to win gold medals, because I worked at Horse and Hound at the time, and I remember they had a gold embossed cover with this beautiful Palomino with Lee Pearson on it, so it was perfect. His new horse isn't as nicely coloured. He should have thought about that when he was searching for a Paralympic horse. Forget looking for one, you know, with an amazing temperament, or they all, depending on which level they are, they look for different things. So if you're competing in one of the tests that they only allow walk or trot, you have to find a horse with an absolutely amazing walk, because that's, you know, that's what's going to be judged. They can't have one weak pace. That's got to be their best pace. So yes, never mind looking for all that. He should have looked for one that was Palomino or a dun. A nice dun would have been good.
I saw Lee ride at the World Equestrian Games, and just an amazing, you know, para or not, he's an amazing rider.
He is. He's very, very good. He competes in able-bodied dressage, and it's quite amazing because a lot of riders do. And actually, Sophie Wells, who's also on the British squad, is really interesting, because she is the only person, I think, in the history of equestrianism who's competed for her country as a Paralympic rider, but she's also represented Britain as an able-bodied rider in the Young Rider European Championships in dressage. So she's a very talented young lady.
To give an acknowledgement to some of our team that's heading over there, they're headed by our friend Missy Ranshausen, who's been on the show numbers of times, and also Rebecca Hart, who's a regular here on the Horses in the Morning show. We had her on because for a number of times, and they're now headed over there. Jonathan Wentz, Donna Panessa, and Dale Dietrich are also going over. But Rebecca Hart is pretty good, and I think she has a good chance. And what's nice about the Olympics, as opposed to other competitions that they go over for, is the para don't always have the money and the finances to bring their own horses. So a lot of times, like when our team goes over to Europe, they're riding catch horses over there. And here, in this case, FedEx is transporting their horses over the time, which is kind of nice.
Oh, wow, that's lovely. It's really nice to hear, and it's nice to see people putting money into investment in para dressage, because I do think of all the Paralympic sports, dressage is just one of the most accessible and inspiring to watch. And from, you know, you've got from riding for the disabled, I don't know if you have a similar charity over in the States, but over here it's a huge charity, which is grassroots, people learning to ride after injury, or if they've been born with a disability, and there's a huge big national charity that gives them the chance to ride. And then it goes all the way up to our Paralympic riders who have been incredibly successful over the years. So it's really nice to see it being treated with such seriousness and people investing in the sport.
Well, and I noticed an article on horseandcountry.tv about Burley coming up. Burley is it's a little house in the country, huh?
It is a very smart country house. We are quite spoilt in Britain because most of our events are held at very, very smart houses and, you know, beautiful parkland, and it's all a bit Jane Austen. So if you ever want to come across and experience what life was like and back in the days of Pride and Prejudice, just come to a horse trials and look at the park, and you'll be transported back there. And Burley is one of the biggest ones. So you've got Burley and Badminton, and this year we had no badminton, so it's all about Burley.
Yeah, and you have a lot of the riders from the Olympics have stayed over to ride at Burley, haven't they?
They have indeed. We've got three of our own team members, William Fox Pitt, Mary King, and Tina Cook, are all going to be in action. We've got some New Zealand riders, one of the German riders. So a really good squad considering just how close it's been to the Olympics themselves.
And has the rain stopped?
It has. It's been sunny for weeks. We've had a heat wave. It's been when I say heat wave, it's probably, you know, very nice and cool for some areas of your listeners. I'm sure where Jamie's from, it would probably be seen as a freezing cold winter's day.
But yeah, she'd be wearing a coat.
It's been up in the 30s, and I've been complaining, and my horse has been very, very lazy. He's more of a kind of a nice, cool breeze kind of horse. He's not too happy about having to work hard in the sun.
Well, you guys are probably happy for a little sun and heat after the miserable beginning of the summer that you had. Now, by the way, you have sent it over here. We've had about 5 inches of rain in the last couple of days. It's feeling very tropical in Florida, which it's supposed to. I mean, we're supposed to feel that way this time of year. Now, let's go on to something else that's on horseandcountry.tv, and that is something that I grew to love during the World Equestrian Games here in Kentucky was vaulting, and the World Vaulting Championships are going on, and we followed, in the lead up to the World Equestrian Games, we did the World Equestrian Games radio show, and we followed certain athletes in every sport, and one of the groups that we followed was the British vaulting team with Joanne Eccles and her sister on it, and of course they did very well, and apparently they did very well again.
Yes, Joanne Eccles is always winning vaulting. She is phenomenal. And so, yeah, she won gold individually, and then she won silver with her sister in the pas de deux when there's two of them vaulting at once. And we've got an amazing picture on our Facebook wall that we shared from the FEI of Joanne in action. So do go and check it out. She's doing something quite extraordinary and wearing a gold leotard.
Yeah, and she is the nicest girl. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to spend any time with her, but her and her sister are so nice, so friendly. They give great interviews. They're very press savvy, and they just get it. I mean, they're just nice girls.
Yeah, they're lovely, and I think they really welcome any support for the sport, because again, it's a more of a minority discipline, and of course they're lovely because they're Scottish like me, so that's what makes them so lovely and charming.
And their horse in that picture, by the way, is absolutely beautiful.
He's beautiful. And again, it's, you know, finding the right vaulting horse is very difficult. You have to have one that, you know, is big enough. And they're all huge. I once had a go at vaulting several years ago. And the horse I rode was called Tiny, which is a bit of a misnomer because he was 18.3 hands high. So that's quite big.
Well, and Joanne and her sister, Hannah, also won a silver medal in the pas de deux, which is fun to watch, too. And the team, I guess, was won by Germany. Germans have done very well in vaulting over the years. So congratulations to all of them in the vaulting world. And then also something about Ireland and some jumping or something.
Yes, now the Nations Cup series has come to a close, and which is when we have the eight best show jumping teams in the world, which is decided by a league thing. So the current eight best compete at eight different home qualifiers and throughout the season, and then we have a winner overall. And Ireland weren't having a very good time this year, and they were heading towards the bottom two, And what normally happens is the bottom two teams in this tier get relegated and the top two teams in the tier below come up. And Ireland were in danger of getting relegated. But then they just suddenly got things together and they won the last two legs of the series and went from seventh to third. So it was very impressive. And what was quite amusing was Germany have dominated throughout, as they always do. But towards the end, they started to tail off and they came stone last in the final leg in Ireland. But such was their lead that they still won the series because they just dominated all summer long. So very many congratulations to Ireland for pulling back and for Germany for winning even when they come last. They're undefeatable.
And should we mention who Ireland knocked out of third place?
Was it us? Was it Britain?
Yeah,
did we move down? Yeah. See, I think we knew we weren't going to win, and at least we weren't anywhere near the bottom two. But next year, there's plans to change the series, and I think to make it more inclusive and to not make it so European-based. And so you might see America coming back to the fore in the Nations Cup series because they were knocked out at the end of last year, unfortunately. So, yes, real changes afoot, so we're watching that story closely to see what happens there.
Now, one of the things I noticed, too, is France always been that, you know, I'm not a big follower of show jumping. Has France always been that good in show jumping, or is that an anomaly this year?
They certainly, they're really quite good. I don't know, kind of, you know, I'm a young thing, so I don't know way back when, but they are, you know, in the last sort of 10 years or so, they've always been right up there, and they've got some really good riders. So, yes, they do well.
Okay, cool. What else is going on?
Well, we have got a new program this week, which is all about Hartbury International Horse Trials. So, not one of the ones with the very smart stately homes in the background, but a really popular event over here in Gloucestershire and lots of top riders in action. So we'll, as soon as it's up on our website, it will be posted on our Facebook page so everybody can tune in, and you can also watch on Sky 280 if you're listening in the UK. And we've got some really good videos as well. If you want to watch one of our other programs, we have Canter Banter, which is our show jumping interview and review show, and that's online now. So do head to our website. It's horseandcountry.tv/videos, and you can watch about 1,300 free videos now. So do have a look.
Very good. And I wanted to tell you that Jennifer and I found, when we win the lottery, we're moving to England, and we found our new house. It's for sale over there. It's the Quenby Hall Estate in Hungarton, in Leicestershire.
Well, Leicestershire is real hunting and eventing land, so a good choice.
Yeah, it's only 11 bedrooms and 7 reception rooms and 7 houses and cottages and 1,100 acres. But, you know, it's very manageable.
As long as you hold a horse trial there, you'll be absolutely fine. I'm sure if you hold one horse trial, you'll make all your money back. Everyone will come flooding through the gates, and yeah, and you'll be making a profit by buying that house.
Well, £12 million, which I think is about $2,000 million. So, you know, we're probably going to need some money to help pay the electric bill on this particular house.
Yeah, you could get solar panels on the roof. I'm sure they wouldn't mind.
Oh, that'll not take that care of it. Yeah, there you go.
And not that you get that much sunshine in Leicestershire either. So,
oh,
yeah, maybe not.
Well, we have a bedroom for you. It'll be fine.
Oh, thank you. That would be good. Yeah, you can stable my horse as well. I'll come and live in the countryside instead.
Well, thank you, Victoria, for joining us. We really appreciate you being here again, and we'll talk to you again next week.
My pleasure. I'll speak to you next week.
Victoria sounded tired, I think. The post-Olympic letdown has hit her.
It never ends over there. No sooner they finish with the Olympics, they're getting ready for Burley. Good God.
I know. I know. Well, we are going to take a break here. We're going to hear from EQ Ready Records, and then we have our song for the day, which is Get Up and Go by Mary Ann Kennedy. That's a fun one. And then we're going to be back with Michelle and Dr. Jones on Your Horse's Home and what helps make that safe. So we'll be right back.
But before we get to today's tip, let's hear from today's sponsor. Coach Jen here with Amanda Eckelberg of EQ Ready Records Equine Records Management Service. Amanda, EQ Ready Records is really a fantastic service now that I've learned about it, and it's getting a lot of us horse folks organized. What made you start EQ Ready Records? It's such a unique concept.
Well, that's pretty simple, really. I've worked in and around the horse business for the last 15 years in various aspects, in the breeding barn, in the vet's office, at the training barn, at the ranch, and everywhere I've gone, it always amazes me. Nobody is available to take good care of their records, which is so important. They spend a lot of money getting double vaccinations. They get coggins pulled 2 and 3 times a year because they can't ever find them. Those kinds of things, and it made me wonder, wow, you know, these people really need help. They don't want to, nobody wants to do the paperwork. Nobody wants to sit behind the desk and enter things in the computer, but when you need it, you need it. For example, a couple years ago here in Texas, we had, you know, a flu rhino outbreak. Everybody was calling the vet clinic, is my horse vaccinated for this? Is my horse vaccinated for this? How simple would it have been for them to just get on the computer, log in, and see exactly what their horse has been vaccinated for and when? Or if they needed to do any other preventative maintenance, they could do it at that time. So I came up with this concept for we can do it effectively, cost-effectively, and accurately, and all of your information is secure. It's available when you need it, where you need it, and you don't have to worry. That's just one less thing you have to worry about.
So you're taking the, oh, expletive out of those situations by being our record keepers for us.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm glad you started it because it's a fantastic service. Folks out there listening, you need to go to EQReadyRecords.com, so easy to spell, and check this out. You'll be glad you did, and folks who take care of your horses for you when you're away will be glad, and your vet's office will be glad, too, because they're sick of you calling. We'll see you again soon, Amanda.
All right, thank you.
And now, on with today's tip.
beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I've got a beautiful feeling. Horses are coming my way. You're listening to Horses in the Morning.
Yes, you are, and I am Glenn the Geek here with Coach Jen. Jamie is off today. She will be back on Friday just in time for another batch of really bad ads and some more terrific guests, I assume. Jennifer has me hopping today here with all kinds of things going on. And next up, we have our friends over at thehorse.com, and that calls for this.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
And as usual, we have one of our favorites from the horse. Michelle is on here with us. Good morning, Michelle.
Hey, well, thanks. Good morning, Glenn. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Jennifer's getting a hold of Dr. Jones here, but I thought I'd get you on. I'll tell you what, when we get the news, we have Google Alerts set up for anything that has to do with horses, and so we see almost every news story in the country that has to do with horses. And the last 2 days, it has been nothing but mosquitoes, EEE, and West Nile. I tell you what, you guys must be inundated in stories over there at the horse about this.
Well, you know, we're doing a mosquito-borne disease Ask the Vet Live next week, everyone can listen in. It's Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. We have two vets who will be on answering questions that have been sent in over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's that time of year. Those mosquitoes are out. Time to dump your stagnant water, no standing water troughs, update those vaccines. It's what the vets are recommending. So, yeah, nasty mosquitoes. It's their last hurrah before fall sets in.
Now, we have, we live in Florida, so you'd expect us to have mosquitoes, and we had a bad tropical storm at the beginning of the season, so we ended up with a ton of mosquitoes and a ton of standing water, and then over the last couple of days, we've just had torrential rains. It's been very tropical here in Florida, go figure. The mosquitoes had just started to wane off a little bit, and now they'll be back in full force. But, there are many parts of the country are dry, and I'm sure aren't having the number of mosquitoes that they did before. But I know New England is especially, they're finding tons of mosquitoes with West Nile and EEE up there.
Well, yeah, and in my area, we had a late snow melt, and that contributed to really aggressive lots and lots of mosquitoes. So, I think the last count that I saw was 77 equine cases reported, but I'm sure it's gone up since then, more than 700 human cases reported to the CDC. So, yeah, it's that time of year. To make sure that you're watching out, taking care of your grasses, mowing stuff, getting that water anywhere where mosquitoes can reproduce, taking care of that, and then updating those vaccinations if you need to, or doing boosters. So fortunately, we have protection.
Dr. Jones just joined us. Dr. Jones, we were just talking here real quick about I've seen 1,000 news stories here about mosquito problems this year. Does it seem higher this year across the country, or is this typical and I'm just not remembering?
No, it is higher, and it's because of the weather. And we already had warnings sent out to all the veterinary clinics back in April, May, saying because of the warm winter, watch out. And then as the summer progressed on with these high humidity, high heat, and then the rains here in Florida especially, we've been seeing now notes about the mosquito population is increasing. So, yeah, it's worse this year.
Yeah, I noticed that, we even go out to walk the dog, we have to spray ourselves. I mean, it's that bad this year. Are you seeing any cases in Florida here of EEE or West Nile or anything?
Knock on wood, I have not seen any cases. The last case we had was last November in 2011. I mean, literally just within a year, we had two unvaccinated horses, a six-year-old mare and her baby. The baby was 2 years old or a year and a half that was positive for EEE.
Okay.
And they were in the swamp area, so, that I think that was reported by thehorse.com, too, because they got it off the side of the USDA here in Florida. But that was the most recent cases we saw. And, again, they're unvaccinated. And, you know, even the babies need to be vaccinated. We got a lot of foals that are 5 months old or maybe older now. And if mom's been vaccinated within 4 weeks of her due date, they don't need to start vaccinating until 5 months unless there's an outbreak. You might want to start as early as 4 months.
We were having some trouble here finding – Jennifer came up with the magic potion. We were having some trouble finding a fly spray that would help with the mosquitoes, and with our horse anyway, and she came up with this magic potion. She makes catnip tea. She actually takes catnip, makes tea out of it, puts it in the spray bottle, and it has done amazingly well with the mosquitoes.
Oh, really? That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you know, catnip you can get anywhere. And Jennifer, you said it was probably 75% better than the fly sprays for the mosquitoes. This has been too much for flies, but
yeah, it doesn't do squat for a fly.
But
wow, but that's a great idea.
Yeah, it's catnip tea. It's cheap, easy to make. You brew it like you would tea, put it in your spray bottle and spray it on the horse. Now, we had a problem with stray cats attached to his face, but other than that, it's been fine. So,
by the kitty sitting on your horse's back.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Michelle, go ahead.
So this week we're talking about horse housing that your vet approves of. I don't know, and it's too bad Jamie's not here because I'm sure Jamie has some stories of seeing horses that have been injured either in their stalls or in their paddocks and their fences. I have one that I saw that was at a barn where the horse hit the latch on the gate and pulled the skin off its ribs, like probably 24 inches worth of skin ripped from the side of the horse. And so that stuff happens. Dr. Jones, what kind of accidents have you seen that have been related to stalls and paddocks?
That is the most common, and we call that filleting. They filleted the side. So, you know, they could probably use a little deboner knife and, you know, take the bones like you could do fish and just pull them right out because the bones are exposed and everything in the ribs,
it was ugly.
And what the problem is with those are the horses that bolt. They literally want to bolt out of those stalls, and you just give them a small crevice. You're trying to put the halter on. Next thing you know, they're flying through the crevice, and that latch didn't get completely turned backwards. And it's called a bolt latch, by the way. It has a little bit of a hook to it. And I'm going to post one on my Facebook page, a picture of it, and a picture of a filleted horse. It's over. So that people can remember that if they have them, they're fine to use. You just got to make sure you slide them completely back when you open up the stall doors. And I don't care how good your horse is. One spook, like yesterday, we had a really good horse. We went to vaccinate it. Same time we put the needle into the side of the horse, lightning bolt struck outside. We couldn't control
really?
That. And that horse was a little freaked out by the next two shots I had to give it. So
<You're> bad.
Quite bad for her.
Really bad. But, yeah, you know, seeing that happen, it definitely made a mark on me. And anytime I have a stall door around, I'm blocking the latch with my body and trying to not let the horse be close to it. What are some of the other things that horses do to themselves in their stalls?
The buckets, those buckets you hang to water your horse, we've had this discussion before on here, they'll rub their face on and they'll lose the little tips on the ends of the buckets and they'll fillet their eyelid. So their eyelid will be dangling down in front of their eye and they'll be quite a bit uncomfortable, get swollen, all that kind of stuff. You got to have the vet out to suture them up. Those are another thing. You have to make sure the tips stay on those buckets or you need to put some electrical tape or duct tape over them to make sure that they stay protected.
Okay.
That's the other very, very, very common injury we see in the stalls.
Mm-hmm. And these, they're common and they're time intensive to get to heal from my experience and also can be expensive to take
very
care
true.
Of. Yeah, for something that is avoidable. You hope most of the time. Nothing's 100% avoidable with horses. But anything else, horses? What about getting cast in stalls?
Cast in stalls is a very big problem. And then the thoroughbred world likes to bank up their shavings on the side to try to avoid the cast in stall idea. Not always is that perfect, but it is a something you can certainly try to keep them from getting cast. That it, size of the stall would probably be your best way to describe or to keep them from having that if you had an appropriately sized stall for those horses to get down and get back up.
What's
good
the
ventilation?
Ideal, for a veterinarian, what's the ideal stall size? What would you say is ideal if you had a choice?
A large paddock.
Yeah, okay. That would have been it all.
Yeah. Now, the old 10 by 10s are too small. So I think standards now are 12 by 12.
Right.
Or you can get some that are 14 by 14 or 16 by 16, depending on if you're in warm bloods or draft horses. But 10 by 10s, you almost feel like you're in a death trap on some of those. And believe it or not, I have a quick funny story. I went into a stall that the girl wouldn't do deworming to the horse because they'd throw its head. So my assistant and I would have to deworm when we vaccinated. And I guess she got the farrier to do it in between the other times. And we climbed into the stall, and I mean climbed. We walked in and went up the mound of manure / shavings that she never cleaned out of her stall. And I thought this horse was going to hit its head on the ceiling. We were so close to the ceiling. That's a death trap. And we finally, yeah, after a couple times doing it, decided we weren't going to do that anymore because it was a death trap. She ended up leaving, selling that place, and the next couple that got the place said that they dug out almost probably, and it was only a 6-stall barn, about 3 of those dump trucks full of dirt, manure, everything that was left over in those stalls,
wow,
3 of those dirt bed things out. And I said, I believe it, because I was climbing on top of a mountain to get to the horse as you'd walk into the stall door. I never envisioned horses having to live like that.
So if you had a client come to you and say, Dr. Jones, please tell me exactly what I need to house my horse. And have you ever had one do that?
Oh, yeah. And we make good recommendations. The other thing that I have seen issues, and I actually have it here at my clinic, it drives me crazy. I actually don't have the problem anymore, but is a smooth wall on the inside. So concrete blocks are nice because you've got smooth concrete block to the corner, smooth to the next corner. When you do tongue and groove, a lot of times you'll have the post on the inside of the stall, and that gives them a nice sharp corner for them to itch their mane on, scratch their butt on, that kind of thing. They can get splinters from those corners. The barn that I moved into for my clinic, it was already put up, had the corner beading that you would find in a home, metal corner beading on all these corners. We had to go through and rip them all off because they were already peeled up as it was, and horses were only in this barn for 5 years prior to me purchasing this place. And the beading was curled up to the point that it had a sharp metal edge to it. And you just get any horse to rub its rear end or its neck on there, it's going to fillet its skin.
Yeah.
So a smooth inside is best because they have nothing sharp to, you know, catch themselves on to rub and scratch.
So what other kind of things do you recommend to your clients when they're housing their horses? Ventilation
is huge. That's huge, especially here in Florida. It's very huge because it gets so hot. So facing the barn in the appropriate breeze direction, east-west is best here in Florida. I'm not sure about the rest of the country. And then having a way for heat to escape at the top of the barn. I have one barn that's a very lovely barn to go into, but it has no way to escape the heat because they have glass windows all along the rooftop of the barn. And I'd love to take a BB gun and shoot out all those glass windows because it would be so nice just to be able to pull the air out through the rooftop. Attaching your barn up north to an indoor arena is fantastic in the wintertime, but horrible for the horse's respiratory tract.
So with ventilation, what kind of problems can we have if we don't have good ventilation in our stables?
The respiratory tract is the biggest thing. You'll get a lot of coughing, hacking, heavy horses because the dirt and debris just backs up. And people love to blow those stalls out, blow out the aisleways, and that just adds to your respiratory tract infections too. And that's the biggest thing. You'll also get some eye injuries because of dust that's kicked up into the eye, conjunctivitis, that kind of thing.
So, and then you and I had talked about mats and stalls sometimes being an issue. What issues have you seen with matting in stalls?
There's a couple. I was in this one barn. They've changed them all out since then. They had the mats that would allow the urine to go through, so they had porous holes in them, but yet they would keep the shavings and the manure on top. And those came loose, and I would trip on those, the and everything. I would get my foot caught on them, And that's just a hazard to going in just to catch a horse. Even a frightened or a nervous horse would jump away from you as you fall down in front of them, and they may land on you. The horses themselves getting cast in those, getting your legs caught in those are pretty tough. So if you get mats, I always recommend that people buy the largest mats they can and piece them together. So usually in like a 12 by 12, you can get four mats to fit, and then you butt them up to each other very closely, but you have to make sure that the surface you're putting them on, whether it's a clay, which is the most likely, or dirt, is tamped down level. And it's worth paying for somebody who knows how to level a stall to get it perfectly level before you put those mats in, because then you'll never have to change them out. The mats I haven't installed since 1995. I bought this place in 2000. I have not had to change the mats out. They have not altered, meaning gotten higher or lower, and they're sitting on top of clay. They're fantastic.
So you mentioned water buckets already and horses rubbing their eyes on them and filleting their face. What about the bucket height in the stall? Because I know when I, here at home, I have big 100-gallon water troughs that I fill, so I don't deal with buckets. But when I go to horse shows and when I go horse camping, I'm always worried about getting the buckets either too high or too low. Do you have kind of a rule of thumb of how high to hang a bucket so that it's comfortable for the horse to drink out of, but not so low that they're going to get caught in it?
Absolutely. I mean, it needs to be where the neck enters into the chest, that height or higher, because you worry about them pawing out for whatever reason. They're pawing at the hay to move the hay around. They're pawing because they're colicking. Whatever, they'll get their leg caught in the bucket themselves if you have it too low or if you have it on the ground. They'll flood their stall if they have, like a huge bucket. I've seen some people put the big water tubs or muck buckets in there with water in them, and if they paw at those, they can dip them over and flood their stalls. But that's the safest margin is the top of the bucket is at the level where the neck meets the chest or higher, and not too much high, too much higher, but, I mean, at that level, probably about midway up the neck would be the highest I would go, but nothing lower than that for sure.
Okay. And so you mentioned that your favorite stall is a paddock, and that doesn't help with my argument that I need a barn. So,
no, you need a barn for those electrical storms. You don't want them standing up there being a lightning rod in your paddock.
So I have 100 by 100 paddocks with loafing sheds for my horses, and I always want a barn. But for those paddocks with fencing, what kind of fencing do you recommend? What kind of safety precautions should we put in place when we're fencing our horses in?
Well, I know, Michelle, that The Horse did a great article a while back, and it might be even 4 or 5 years back, I can't remember, on fencing. And if you can dig that article up and post it, that'd be great. They had people rating the fences and which ones were better. Of course, the plastic PVC fence came up as a very popular fence because it didn't have wood splinters. It didn't break that easily, but it still does break. So people misled saying it doesn't break. But, of course, it's very cost-effective. I mean, it's very costly, but it's cost-effective because all you have to do is wash it down if you get the white one and keep it clean. Board fencing is very, very nice to have because it's big. The horses see it. They usually don't go through it. The wire fencings that people put up or the no-climb field fencings, the horse can see it, but sometimes in a shaded area, that fence is not easily seen unless it's got a board on the top to give them some visual that they're coming up to it, especially when you introduce your horses to a new pasture or move them around. You want to, from pasture to pasture, you want them to know their fence lines. The board
or
fencing,
at night.
You can, pardon, yeah, or at night, yeah. The board fencing, you have your issues with splinters, they can break the boards. The field fencing, you need to make sure that you have a proper fence person put them up so there's tension to them. I commonly see people put up their own field fencing, and the horses want to graze at that green grass on the other side, even though they have green grass on their side. They're going to lean over that fence to the point that they're pushing it downward almost, that they can almost step over it, and then the next thing you know, they're trying to step over it and get caught up on it. So you need to have some sort of tension on that or put a board at the top so they're not pushing that fence over. And you have to consider that with horses. Horses are going to push fences outward. So you want your fence board on the inside and your field fencing on the inside so they can't push it outward as easily. Because if they're on the outside and you only nailed in your boards, they're going to pop those boards out very easily just by leaning on them or scratching on them. On construction, we used to have in your corner in a part of our newsletter, which we don't do newsletters anymore. We're doing email blasts. But
on the in your corner of our pasture suggestions, we suggested that if people are building paddocks and pastures to round their corners, and you can see that in Lexington as a prime example. Glenn, you probably know this too. As you're driving around, you'll see these pastures, and the inside pasture has this rounded edge to it. It doesn't have a nice corner, and the reason for that is you can't get two horses to back another horse into that corner and beat the heck out of them. So the whole idea of the rounded corner is there's no trapping of a horse by another horse to get, you know, beat up on. Take the bullying away.
Out here out west, we have quite a bit of barbed wire, and that's actually, I just cut myself on some barbed wire. I was fixing a fence out on the BLM that was down. Do you see barbed wire with horses very often, and do you have an opinion about barbed wire?
You see, I didn't mention barbed wire as a fence for good reason.
No. and I'm thinking I should probably get a tetanus shot booster after getting cut with that barbed wire I was messing with.
The barbed wire is used for the cattle and out ranch in the ranching area, probably in your area too, because it's cheap. And the cattle may rub up against it, know that it's there, decide not to go into it because it is sharp. And this whole idea of it being barbed is to keep predators out and other ones in, you know, their animals in, livestock in. Cattle who get caught in fences and they get them wrapped around themselves because they're leaning, they step through the fence to get to the grass on their side, put their heads between the two strands to get their head, get to that grass on the other side, they'll get wrapped up in it and they'll just stand there and they'll continue to eat. A horse that gets wrapped up in a fence will freak out and try its best to get that wrap off of its leg or wherever it is around the neck, and then they'll continue to fillet themselves with the barbed ends, and you've got these striated zebra-look stripes all the way down and peeled away skin all the way down their leg, down to the bone, cut tendons, arteries. It's a disaster for having barbed wire. Some will put it around the top strand of their field fence to keep the horses from leaning on it. I say get electric wire. Have a good electric wire, and you have to check it. That's the only problem with electric. You'll have to check it and make sure it's still working. But put that around the top to keep the horse off of your fence. Don't use the barbed. Barbed's cheaper, I realize, but there are some complications to them leaning on it, rubbing on it, getting caught in it.
Or just, carrying on and accidentally running into it. I mean, that, they do that all the time. It's just
And people will put flags on these fences. That helps, but it's still... It's just a very dangerous fence, and most of my filleted legs that I'm suturing up come from barbed wire.
We had a piece of barbed wire in the first farm we had. It was about 100 acres, and we had the best farm dog in the world, and she kept a close eye on the property. But one of the things she loved to do was chase deer. We had deer all the time, and we had this piece of barbed wire fence that wasn't near where the horses was in the horse fence. It just ran between two sections of our property that we didn't use, and her favorite thing, she would kill deer by running them through the barbed wire fence. She knew she could chase them that direction, run them through the barbed wire fence. She killed more deer than we did hunting. I mean, it was our dog.
There you
got
go.
More deer. That's how big
it is. It's a nightmare. I put on our general medicine sheet that we send out to new clients, that are, especially the green ones that have never had horses before, is do not use barbed wire for fencing. I'm pretty much adamant about it.
Something else, too, with electric fencing, there's still some people out there that have these, and I can't believe they still exist, but they used to make fencing chargers that had a constant current into the fence.
Right.
And they still sell those, believe it or not. But if you have one of those, throw it away and get one of the pulse kinds, because that is very dangerous for your horse.
Right.
And if you are using a charger, make sure it's well grounded so that your fence stays hot and that you're checking your hot fence line, that nothing shorting it, touching it.
That's a big problem in the Midwest right now with it being so dry, because it uses that moisture to make the circuit around the fence and back to your charger through the ground. And if it's so dry like that and you don't have proper, you know, poles in the ground to ground it, you're going to have a problem. Your fence isn't going to work.
Yeah,
right.
And here in the desert, I run a sprinkler on my grounding rods, and I learned that the hard way because I had a horse go through my fence because it wasn't hot like it was supposed to be, and it was because it wasn't grounded. I had the grounding rods in, but with how dry it was, there was no moisture, so I had no heat in the fence. So, yeah, keep those grounding rods wet if you can.
Yeah, and people have to realize certain horses will respect the fence the first time they touch it and they know it's there. Other ones will continually test it.
Test it every day. I have one that tests it every day. He looks at me, is it on? Just in case.
Yeah,
because there's big adventures.
It.
He needs to go get out and have big adventures. So, Anyway, well, thank you, Dr. Jones. I appreciate it. Everyone, keep your horses safe. And look for those sharp edges in your stall. It's never any fun to go out to feed breakfast and find blood trickling down your horse's face because they rubbed on some sharp corner that you didn't know about.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one last comment. Store your feed and hay away from where your horses are grazing. Or out, if you have them in the barn, I always recommend a two-barrier system, which is the lock on the door to the feed room and a locked bin. And it doesn't have to be a padlock bin. It just has to be a hook lock. The double-latch hooks work great so that they can't get in if they turn the knob, which a lot of people don't realize. They can turn the knob on the door of a feed room and help themselves.
Yeah, good point. And that would be to help prevent them from getting
laminitis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ponies are especially good at opening those doors.
Oh, they are. They study human behavior.
Right. They have a class.
Figure it out.
Door opening 101. Take it right away with it. Yeah. Well, thank you guys.
So,
we really appreciate it.
And
you're welcome.
Thanks, Glenn.
What's your website, Dr. Jones?
Florida Equine. Florida spelled out. FloridaEquine.com.
Yeah. All right, of course.
And we're also on Facebook.
Okay, cool.
And then over on
thehorse.com, right?
Yeah. Yep, yeah. And you know, sign up, send in your questions for our Ask the Vet Live next Thursday. It should be a really good one.
Very good. Thank you, guys. Talk to you next week.
Okay. Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, you know, you were, Jennifer, you were talking during that, you said, remember Joe pushed the whole fence over. That was a wooden fence, too, wasn't it, that Joe
he pushed the fence over, post and all.
Now, he was about a one-ton, 18-and-a-half-hand Percheron.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, we always said, you know, if a horse like that wants to get out of your wooden fence or your no-climb fence or your electric fence, he can get out. If he's determined, he could just push the whole thing over with no problem at all. And
he had very tractor-like behavior patterns.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was built like a tractor, too.
Yeah.
But if he wanted to go someplace, you're not stopping him. And that's true of most horses, if you think about it.
He was just very tractor-like in that he was just fine with going, maybe even tank-like. He moved gently and slowly, but consistently, and was kind of, there was a glacier effect there on that fence. He just, day after day after day, just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, and then until finally he had it pushed over far enough that he just stepped across it.
An electric fence didn't bother him much because he was so big that it really didn't faze him at all. And we would have had to have, we were using solar. I think it was a solar fence charger back then.
Solar charger, yeah.
And it never had enough oomph to affect him. It just didn't even bother him.
Yeah.
I'm a one ton. I don't care about your little wire, your little shock. I can handle that little shock. And he was willing to risk the shock to get out. You know, then you get those horses where they're like, okay, the pain is worth it.
Well, some of them will learn that it only shocks for a second if you're going fast.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And that's where the tape
too.
Comes in because, you know, the tape doesn't snap like the wire does. It kind of stretches a little bit on its way out. So I kind of like that whole tape concept.
Kind of bounces them back a little.
Bounces them back. Ding! Like a little slingshot.
That's right. Just gives
you
them the slingshot
flying across
effect.
The paddock.
And then, of course, we had the one horse, if you remember right, the gray horse that we ended up selling to a very nice guy because we couldn't keep him. He was a big gray horse, and I think we had bought him at an auction. We had saved him from slaughter, too, if I remember right.
Yeah, he was on his way to the dog food can.
And he was a terrific jumper, so much so that he would not stay in any field at all.
Nope.
He would just go from field to field. He would hang out with whatever horses he wanted to hang out with just by jumping the fence. And he did it every day. You never knew which field he was going to be in when he came out in the morning.
Yeah. And he didn't leave town. He would just go into somebody else's field. Yeah.
Yeah. He would jump out of one field, across a pasture, into another field.
Yeah.
Depending on who he wanted to hang out with, and that's what he did. It was his thing, and we just couldn't keep him. He wasn't safe. And he actually went to a place with a guy who wasn't doing very well, had cancer, and they kept the horses in most of the time, and we warned him, don't put this horse out unless you have like a 12-foot fence. And I don't think he got out much because you just couldn't put him out. He was an incredible jumper.
Yep.
He's a fun horse. Well, we're going to be back on Friday, And we're going to be doing really bad ads. Don't forget to get your really bad ads in to Jennifer@horseradionetwork.com. We want to thank all of our guests today for being here. Alex Dawson, who is terrific with the new film, A Wild Horse, Wild Ride. Check that out and find out if it's coming to a theater near you soon. Of course, the lovely Victoria from Horse and Country TV. And Michelle and Dr. Jones from thehorse.com. We also thank our sponsors, EQ Ready Records and Back on Track Products for being sponsors today. Don't forget, you can listen to all the past episodes of Horses in the Morning at horsesinthemorning.com and all of our other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. Well, I got two more shows to record yet today. Got to go do a stable scoop show and then the driving show with Dr. Ying. So all of those will be coming out here before the end of the week. Thank you for filling in, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you all back here on Friday, including Jamie, who would now be saying, hey, neuter and yell. And wear your helmets, people.
Check your fence. Make sure it's hot.